The date is September 24th, 1993, and we're watching The Good Son. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Henry to my Mark.
What's a good line to say? If I let you go, do you think you could fly?
That's right.
Hello, that's everybody. My name is Colin Stewart.
I think that one is the one that you say. Yeah, I mean, there's a few bangers, but yeah, that's definitely the one that I remember from all the trailers back in this day. Well, this week we are kicking off our Kulkvember.
Kulkvember.
I like that. Yes. Kulkvember. We definitely need that. Some rap forms. You know. Yes, watching all the cult classics that that we haven't gotten to on this show yet. And so, well, we need to kick it off with a special guest that we haven't seen. It's been a minute. It's been a minute since we've seen this guy. So please welcome back to the show the long-awaited return of Frank Driscoll.
Can we call you political analyst, Frank Driscoll?
You can now. You can now. Yeah. Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you, Colin. It is great to be back, as always. Thank you. And of course, as mentioned, I have recently re-entered the podcasting game. So what a great way to re-enter than to come back here, you know, when absolutely. I was first a newbie podcaster and I was on your show at times. And it feels a new sense of self, you know.
Nice. I love it.
He's older. He's wiser. Well, yeah. kick us off with your superstitious good luck charm there, Frank, because I think we missed it in the last episode, and I think we need it tonight.
I got you.
Nice. Okay. So there we go. We've got the show christened for luck from Frank. And so here we go. This week, we're looking back at September 1993, when the movies and theaters were The Program, Striking Distance, True Romance, The Joy... Oh, whoops, autocorrect. Joy Lick Club is what I've got, but it's The Joy Luck Club. And of course, our movie for today, The Good Son, which earned $60.6 million on a $17 million budget.
I think The Joy Lick Club is the porn parody of The Joy Luck Club, probably.
That's right. maybe I put that in on intentionally. Maybe that was a big week. I remember The Joy Lick Club coming out.
Yes, but as always, there will be spoilers ahead. We'll be dropping spoilers off cliffs. So if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Right off. Off to the right start right there. I mean, with Kulkvember, we're kicking it off well because we're transitioning from Halloween into this thriller of thrillers. And I do have four taglines for this movie this week. So let's see what a thriller looks like. A Macaulay Culkin thriller looks like for taglines. First, in a quiet town, in a comfortable home, in a perfect boy, evil can be as close as someone you love.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Yeah. Well, number two, I mean, that first one is long. It's got multiple ellipses in it. I mean, that's how long that first one is. The second one, evil has many faces.
You sure that's not the tagline for the Joy Lick Club?
Well, number three, which was only featured on the Hungarian DVD, The True Face of Evil.
Does Macaulay Culkin have a following in Hungary or something? Because that
No, it was interesting because, you know, when I'm looking at my taglines, if there are ones that are specifically from certain translations or certain DVDs, it will tell you. And so this one had one that was from the Spanish DVD, and it also featured one from, like, the Italian DVD or something. But both of those were Evil Has Many Faces. And it's like, well, why did you bother specifying that these two were just because the actual Italian words were different before you did the translation?
It's the same tagline. I can look at them. I can see Evil Has Many Faces is listed here three times.
But the Hungarian DVD stood out that theirs translated slightly different, and it's the true face of evil.
But finally,
number four, bringing it home, visiting relatives isn't always a treat.
Doesn't that one sound like...
That's the tagline
of
the Joy Lit Club.
The Joy Lit Club, yeah, that's right. Well, I was thinking that sounds more like a plucky family comedy. You know, like, you know, visiting relatives isn't always a treat.
Yeah, that sounds like a vacation tagline.
For Marvin and Sally, going home to see their family was more than they set out for. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just, yeah. Well, it doesn't tell us much about this movie, except that there's evil lying around in this movie. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
Cokeember. Okie dokie. After his mother dies, Mark's dad decides to go to Japan on a business trip and leaves him in the care of his Uncle Jack and Aunt Susan. Mark quickly bonds with his cousins, Connie and Henry, but things begin to take a turn when Henry starts to reveal his psychopathic tendencies. Henry's idea of fun includes making bolt guns to kill a neighborhood dog, throwing dummies into traffic, and having frank discussions about dead bodies. As Mark grows uneasy with Henry's behavior, he tries to confide in his aunt and uncle, but Henry is always one step ahead in undermining Mark's credibility. Disappointed in his cousin, Henry tries to get back at him by murdering his own sister, and when that doesn't work, he turns his jealousy towards trying to kill his mother by pushing her off a cliff. But Mark manages to make the save. In the scuffle with Henry, Mark and Henry both go over a cliff but are caught by Susan, one boy in each arm. This presents a problem, because as we know from Dwight Schrute, women have no upper body strength, one of the many defects of their kind. Susan only has the ability to save one, and in a shocking turn of events, she sacrifices her own son and pulls Mark to safety. There you go.
Nice.
Cult-vember.
Nice. Yes.
I love it.
Oh, man. What a Sophie's choice. We'll get there. So this is one of those movies that I remember when it first came out. It was, hey, look, it's the kid from Home Alone is doing an R-rated movie. And I watched it, and that's about all the history I have with this movie. I mean, it was one of those ones that I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, wow, neat. You know, a kid is a bad guy. That's kind of cool. Because, I mean, in 1993, I was, you know, 14 years old, 15 years old. I was, you know, not too far off from Macaulay Culkin's age in this movie. So, yeah. That's obviously what I thought of this movie is enough that I haven't revisited this movie a bunch. I think I only saw it the once when it first came out or back, you know, in the early 90s. So I should go to our special guest for it first, but I know there isn't much. But Frank, what is your history with The Good Son?
Well, I first heard of this movie just a couple weeks back when you mentioned this was a movie on the list. I had no idea this movie existed until you guys mentioned it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, I mean, what is your history with Macaulay Culkin?
Culkinember.
Well, my first memory with Mr. Culkin was the movie Uncle Buck. And that's been a favorite in my household since I was very young.
Oh, man, maybe we'll have to have you back in, like, 2 weeks to watch Uncle Buck.
Oh, it's the kid from Uncle Buck.
When
most people think the other way.
yeah.
So, yeah, that's my long history.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm definitely in kind of the same camp as when Home Alone came out. I did remember him as the kid from Uncle Buck because I had seen Uncle Buck in the theater as well. So at least your history starts at a good place. can't say anything wrong about Uncle Bacchus being the place to start with your history. Well, Colin, in this Kulkvember,
Kulkvember,
what is your history with the good son?
Well, back in the day in my small town of High Prairie, my Uncle Dennis used to own a video store called JJ's Video. And I remember walking into JJ's with my mom to go, like, rent Home Alone for probably the 100,000th time. And then yeah. I was like, hey, you know what? Like, it's Kulkvember every day in the Colin Stewart household. Let's pick up some Home Alone. Let's pick up some Home Alone 2. And then, oh, wouldn't you know it? Look at this movie. It has this guy, too. The Good Son. Let's grab that. So we picked this all up, and I remember, like, watching this movie, and I think it's one of those things in, like, your child mind where it's like, I've just watched Kevin McAllister, like, for 3 hours, and now, you know, my brain doesn't comprehend the idea of an actor playing different characters. So this is basically just, like, Home Alone 3.
taking a very dark turn.
But weirdly, still, it's kind of on brand.
It is
Kevin McAllister,
a little bit.
You know,
yeah.
When you put it that way, yes.
Yeah, the events of the first two movies fucked him up. Yeah. And I mean, really, come on, these are parents that abandoned their son twice. Of course social services took them away and took them to this nice family on the ocean. Yeah. Yeah, this is a foster family situation.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. I remember watching this movie when I was very young. And it's it's got to be the first thriller I ever watched, I would guess. Yeah, and I remember, I mean, I think for most people, if you mention The Good Son to anybody my age, that scene at the end with the mother with the two boys is it's like etched in all of our brains. because I think the idea that a mother wouldn't choose her own child is traumatizing and shocking to a young mind. Yeah. But anyways, I've always just had fond memories of this movie and I thought it was amazing. And that's kind of my history of it. It was interesting to watch it now because I haven't watched it in probably 20 years, I'd guess. But
yeah, yeah. What's funny is one of the things there you said about, you know, it was your first thriller. And I remember there was a movie called Pacific Heights that I watched where it's Michael Keaton is playing a bad guy in it. You know, he's this neighbor that is up to some weird things in an apartment building. And it was the fact that Michael Keaton was in it was kind of my introduction into this thriller genre as well. Like, The Good Son and Pacific Heights were probably a couple of those movies that did it for me, where it's like, okay, I've got these people that I like from other things that are going to get me into this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah. Well, all right. Well, here we go. Let's jump into The Good Son. Directed by Joseph Rubin, who is the director of things like Sleeping with the Enemy and The Stepfather, which are basically The Good Son. even though The Stepfather sounds like it might be in line with the Joy Lick Club. But no, the Stepfather is actually like a thriller about this guy that murdered his family and then goes and starts a new life with a new family and starts doing the same weird shit, right? And Sleeping with the Enemy is the same sort of thing about a stalker ex-boyfriend. That's a Julia Roberts movie. So this is Joseph Rubin's genre, is definitely the Good Son, Sleeping with the Enemy genre, yeah. Produced by Mary Ann Page and Joseph Rubin, and written by Ian McEwan. And I can't help noticing that the font choice that they open the movie with, you know, it feels sort of like a kindergarten cop type font. Like,
it's like Comic Sans.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of that.
This movie, it starts with such a weird tone just because of the font that they've chosen for their credits. And it makes me think of that tagline where it's like, is this the plucky family comedy? You know, it starts off and you're trying to what is this movie? Because it doesn't feel as thriller in the credits as you would expect it to be.
I mean, I would say this movie doesn't feel thriller until the last 15 minutes. Like, I would say tonally, this entire movie is like a gas, like I'm gaslighted into realizing it's a thriller by the end, because the music, like even the music when it starts is not like scary. Like we just watched Silence of the Lambs. That movie starts off and you're like, oh, everybody's getting murdered. Like,
yeah, it's very, it's a Hans Zimmer type. Yeah,
this movie starts off at a soccer game with like it's all happy, and then you see the dad roll up, and he's looking sad, but like not sad enough. Yeah. Like, not sad enough that we're about to go see a dying wife and mother. Like,
yeah. I mean, you can at least look at that dad and go, oh, okay. In hindsight, the look on his face was, it's time. It's happening. So you can understand why he's not showing. But for the audience's purpose, yeah, you might want to shed a tear. You might want to get some of that menthol spray for your eyes there and, you know, and drop one out of your ocular cavity. You know, yeah. It's...
But I mean, honestly, even the cut between Mark with his dying mother to her funeral ends up kind of being comical. Because mm-hmm. It's like, I won't let you die. Cut. Ashes to Hard ashes, cut. Dust to dust. Like, it's like...
Yeah, like as I'm watching these opening credits and everything, you know, and the music choice as well, and making these observations, I'm thinking to the fact that Frank has told me that he has not seen this movie. And I'm like, how much did he know? I told him The Good Son starring Macaulay Culkin. That's all I know that I told him. So Frank, like leading into this, what were you expecting? How much research did you put into it before you turned it on?
Well, I did look up the movie on Google, as you mentioned it, because, of course, I hadn't known of it, so it's like I'll get a good insight. And the first thing I mentioned was thriller, kid, psychopath, Macaulay Culkin. I'm like,
okay.
Huh.
Yeah?
Fascinating. And I was like, because I've seen a few movies of this genre. I think The Bad Seed is one that's popular. They remade it recently for Lifetime, and they had freaking Rob Lowe, of all people, in it for some reason. And I was like, well, I've seen films because, well, my mother watches a lot of Lifetime crap anyway. So I've seen a lot of films with children that are psychopaths.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see a kid I know being a psychopath.
It's funny that you say The Bad Seed, because when I was reading through IMDb trivia, that is the one movie that has been credited as inspiring this movie. So this movie is actually something that has taken its inspiration from specifically The Bad Seed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what you're familiar with, Frank, I'm sure you now see some of the parallels with that.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm familiar with The Bad Seed. I don't know. Yeah, Colin's shaking his head over there, too. So,
well, I'm only familiar with the remake of The Bad
Seed.
The
Rob Lowe one that you just...
Like, okay. Actually, Rob Lowe. Yeah, there was an original one in the 60s. That was what started it off. So, yeah. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the Rob Lowe one either. So, I mean, you're more familiar with The Bad Seed than I am. Well, I mean, let's talk about the cast of this movie, because we did bring up Macaulay Culkin, of course, right? I mean, it is, as we've established, Culkvember.
Culkvember. Yeah, I mean, Macaulay Culkin, the OG child star, in my opinion, yeah. I guess, from anybody who was born in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I guess Jesse Bradford, whoever that is, the name sounds familiar, but he was originally cast as Henry. And there were delay problems and everything like that, but Jesse Bradford was cast. And then this is the movie that, if you remember back when we did Home Alone 2, I mentioned that, like, the only requirement for doing Home Alone 2 was that Macaulay Culkin was going to get to star in this movie. And so they forced this Jesse Bradford kid out to get Macaulay Culkin this part. And that's the only way that he was willing to do Home Alone 2. Or at least, that was the only way that Macaulay Culkin's father said that Macaulay Culkin was willing to do Home Alone 2.
I mean,
Kit Culkin, famously a bit of a unpleasant fellow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got Elijah Wood, Frodo Baggins himself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Baby Frodo Baggins as Mark. Yeah, he's tiny, tiny. I keep forgetting that he was a child actor. I mean, that's the thing.
He's not the guy you think of as a child actor, but I guess he is.
Yeah.
Wendy Crewson is Susan. For the life of me, I could have sworn that Jamie Lee Curtis was the mom in this movie for some reason, but...
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well, Mary Steenburgen was actually originally cast and then had to drop out because there were delays on it.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah, Wendy Crewson, who, if you know the Santa Claus trilogy, is, of course, Scott's ex-wife.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she's the one married to Judge Reinhold.
Ah. It's been so long since I've seen any of the Santa Claus films. Yeah. I forgot that.
Well, we haven't picked our Christmas movies once Cultvember is over.
We got two more Culkins, Quinn and Rory, Rory was Dead Richard and Quinn was Connie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want to play a game?
Sure.
How many Culkins are there?
Four.
Frank, you're a trivia host. How many Culkins are there?
Just the kids. I originally thought there were two until I saw this movie.
Oh, okay.
So that brought up three, but you said there's four. I don't know. My guess is maybe three. There's probably more. There's probably eight or nine for all.
Actually,
I know.
No. I think there's six. I think I know this. I think there's six.
Okay. Well, the correct answer. I'm sorry, both of you are wrong, but close. However, but the closest without going over is Colin at six. There's actually seven Culkins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there is Shane, Dakota, McCully, Kieran, Quinn, Christian, and Rory. And so, yes, as mentioned, yeah, Quinn and Rory in this movie. Quinn only ever did two movies, and then she said, fuck this acting shit, nah, I'm out. But Rory, of course, has gone on to other things, and yeah, and Kieran, yeah, I mean, Scott Pilgrim, which one is that? That one's Kieran and Scott Pilgrim, isn't it?
Which one is in Succession?
Oh, I don't watch Succession, so I'm not sure.
I think...
Yeah, I mean, Kieran and Rory both have their own nice little careers, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think it's Rory. No, it's Kieran. Kieran is in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, okay.
I know it's one of them. I'm not sure for Succession, but...
Which one is it in Home Alone? Which one plays Fuller in Home Alone? That's Rory, isn't it? Or is that Kieran?
Oh, yeah, Kieran is in Succession. Kieran's in Succession.
Okay.
And, yeah, Kieran is also in Home Alone as Fuller.
Okay. Then what the fuck is Rory in? Okay, maybe Rory. I shouldn't have started the how many Culkins are there game.
Let's see, what is Rory in? Rory was in Signs. And he was in Scream 4.
Oh, right. He was the... Well, spoiler alert, he was the killer in Scream 4, if I remember correctly.
He's young Richie in Richie Rich.
Well, interesting. We'll have to keep our eye out for that in a couple of weeks. Culkvember.
Culkvember.
Yeah, okay, so... Yeah, we've gotten to the point where we're mentioning Rory Culkin as one of the people in this movie... And he's just in the photograph. He's not even in the movie. He's in the photograph. So, yeah, I think we could call our cast list there. Not a very big cast. I mean, it's really the three parents, unless you want to count the one that dies. She's not in much of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so this movie, I mean, it's quite frankly, the credits are very long. And then we get the soccer game. We get the hard cut to the funeral, which, as Colin pointed out, is a little bit hilarious. But now this business deal, though, that his father is going on. What is his dad's company? Like, what did they ever mention what his dad does? Or is he just going for business? Like, is he going to Japan because he's like meeting with the fucking Yakuza or something? Like,
yeah, he just does.
I'm sure he does like importing, exporting.
I'm quote unquote. Yeah. Set up for life. Like, what's going on with this guy? It's I think his dad's up to some shady business.
Yeah,
he's like, little do you know, there's a side movie where he's some assassin Like he's just over in Japan murking people for money.
Well, at one point we established that Peter McAllister has a father in Lethal Weapon, because there's a Peter McAllister in that, remember? We had this whole drug cartel thing going on with the McAllister family. Like, what if this somehow factors in, and that's how, you know, Kevin McAllister ended up in this foster family and having his name changed to Henry? And
I mean, it's kind of funny, like, it's just these 90s movies, and just it's like the American dream on full display. Everybody has like the most massive mansion I've ever seen, like with no explanation about what these people do for work.
Nope.
Like Henry, the property that Henry and his parents live on appears to be like 5 acres. Like it's massive.
Oh yeah,
it's got like
massive.
It's got oceanfront. Like he has his own personal forest where he can have the like highest tree fort I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah,
he has a section of the forest that he has his own private fence to. Like at the point in the movie when his mom goes to his little secret shed. Doesn't that feel like it's the first time she's ever going through that fence?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, this property is big enough that they don't mind that, okay, you know what? That kid can have that back corner. Because we don't use that back corner anyway. He can have that for his shed, for his treehouse, or I guess he has two separate places. He has the place where the treehouse and the shed aren't in the same location.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
He has a whole compound. He's like, who's the Waco guy? Like,
David Koresh. Yeah.
David Koresh.
Yeah. They've got some Branch Davidian shit going on here. Yeah.
Goes to the top of the tree. I am the chosen one.
Yeah.
That's right.
All you down there.
Do you think you can fly? Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta say, here's one of the problems that I have with this movie. Like, I'll just throw it out there right off the bat, because I'm tainted by the fact that I know Macaulay Culkin so much better from movies like Home Alone. And so, you know, as we've established, like as we were saying right in the beginning, this could have been a Home Alone movie, because even though Macaulay Culkin is great at delivering lines, he delivers them exactly the same way as he does as Kevin McAllister. There is no quote-unquote character. He's a good child actor, but he's only a good child actor of one type of character. Mm-hmm.
But again, it goes back to tone. The score of this movie does nothing to help his acting. So it's like, I think his line deliveries are great.
Yeah.
But because you've seen him deliver them like in like comedic movies where the music is very up and light and like everything is ha ha, let's cheer for the little kid, it all comes on here. And in this movie they don't have like the low, like even like I swear when they drop the body over the bridge, or the dummy over the bridge, it's like, wow, look at this, like crashes, explode, like it's not painted to be this like serious thing. And so like, I don't know. It's like Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell can never not be funny. Like, if I saw Will Ferrell in, like, the most serious, like, he was trying to do, like, Denzel Washington gangster stuff, like, I would still laugh because it's Will Ferrell. And I feel like the same thing is happening to Macaulay Culkin in this movie. And then, weirdly, it paints Mark as, like, what's the big deal, man? Like, why are you freaking out? Like, what's your problem, bro?
Right. I want to point out, you know, I actually was kind of laughing a bit at the bridge scene because it reminded me of the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, the scene where all the cop cars go down.
Yeah, just because of the sheer number of crashes. Yeah, I mean, apparently that was actually inspired by some people that had actually done that prank.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's dangerous as shit. And, you know, but Frank brings up a bit of a point where it's like, you know, yes, that is a terrifying prank. That is like an absolutely, disgusting thing to think that someone would do that. but it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't seem sinister. Like, it actually seems like, ah, oh, they got away with it. Mm-hmm. Those kids. Boys will be boys.
Yeah.
It probably could have helped if there was music in the background, but it was just crash, crash, crash. And you mentioned score. Are you sure there was a score to the movie? Because I could have sworn I heard the same song over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, to go back, the other thing that caused me a little bit of cognitive dissonance was after the mom dies, Mark and his dad embark on, like, an 11-state road trip with the most happiest-sounding music you could ever imagine. Like, oh, this is father-son bonding, but they keep pointing to the fact that Mark's not paying attention and listening to him. And then by the time they get there and his dad's like, yeah, I just can't break through to him. You're like, what? Like, everything seemed good. Like, I don't know. It's so weird.
You know what I find interesting, though, is that this guy is going to Japan for a job that is going to set them up for the rest of their lives. So you'd think, though, that he would be successful enough. Or do you think he's, like, maybe a tech guy that is selling his company? Could it be something like that?
Maybe, but I still feel like there's no way he couldn't have afforded to bring Mark with him to Japan.
Well, see, yeah, because you're bringing up this point of this road trip. Like, they couldn't even fly to Maine or wherever it is that they're going to. You know, like, he couldn't have flown that 11-state journey. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. It's all weird.
Maybe the road trip was for bonding, I guess. He was hoping to get through to his boy. The line that he makes about, though, like, are you done killing the world or whatever? Like, he's sitting there playing his video games, and he's like, oh, are you killing the world or whatever? I guess is an homage to one of the lines that Jack Torrance says in The Shining in the car. He says something about, are you done killing all the aliens or something like that.
That's interesting, because I thought that the way they shot that road trip, like that car going through the desert and stuff, was very Shining.
A little bit, right? Like, he was trying, but it does show you that, oh, no, Stanley Kubrick does do something special. As much as I hate Stanley Kubrick stuff in general, he does definitely do something special with his cinematography. I mean, You know, I am sorry, Joseph Rubin, you don't quite have the same finesse as Stanley Kubrick.
This is also a movie that I wonder if it's like a mix mash of like scripts.
Yeah.
Because there's certain plot lines that like make no sense. Like the idea that Mark thinks like his mom is going to, they really press home like he thinks his mom is going to come back somehow. Like he's going to see her again. Like she's going to come back somehow because he made a promise to save her from death. And it kind of stays throughout the movie, but it never really pays off. Mm-hmm. It's very strange.
I mean, the only way that it does pay off, I guess, is that in the end, he's decided that his mom's been reincarnated inside his aunt. Like, is that ultimately the message of this movie? Is that Susan is mom now in his mind? Like, has he snapped? Should he be seeing the psychiatrist more often in the week than he currently is? Yeah.
I mean, there's that one part where he wakes up from a nightmare or whatever and sees it and thinks like that. But I don't know if that's like my end takeaway, because then at the end he mentions like, oh, I am too afraid to ask her if she would have ever chose different, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I want to talk about more at the movie, the end of the movie, at the end of the show. But back to Henry, even when he shows up in that weird paper mache mask,
that
might be when he's at his creepiest. But it's still like,
well, that's the introduction to him, though, is the fucking paper mache mask. Like, and it's one of these things where you kind of think it's Chekhov's mask, but it never comes back.
It
would have kind of been cool if it had come back. I mean, I know then you're kind of treading into Michael Myers type territory. You know, you're bringing in a mask aspect, but it's like, why not bring it back? The masks were a weird ass thing, and he, you know, like both of them with the mask, like you, could have done something. I don't know. But yeah, we go from the desert to like the snowy water. Where are they? Like, does it ever say? Or I assumed it was like Maine, northeast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Maine. Yeah.
Yeah, Maine.
Because I'm pretty sure that's what they said.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, wherever it is, like, it's obviously isolated because you got to put your Jeep on a boat to get it across the water.
It's Summer Isle.
Yeah, it's Summer Isle all over again. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of a plane with a boat, yeah, it's your Jeep on a boat. But, I mean, that is a Jeep, so I might as well do it. I might as well go to Sponsorship Corner.
I was wondering what was going to be the segue for that, because I was thinking, what was in the movie that...
Well, it's a small week. It really is. Well, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, The Good Son is brought to you by Jeep and Ford, Nike, Columbia Outerwear, Bauer Skates, Raggedy Ann, and the book Madeline. And, I mean, I don't even have a fake one for you this week. Because, like, you know, they never said what Jack's fucking startup or whatever it is, you know. So, I don't know. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, like, one possible thing to bring in would have been the shoes. Like, the Nike would have been one that gets us into it, because Henry, you may have noticed, wears one white and one black shoe, which is to show the duality of his personality, the split, the good and evil. And that's why he wears one white and one black shoe, yeah, for good and evil. It's all metaphorical, baby.
I didn't even notice that, but that's the move.
I was wondering why he wore two different shoes.
Yeah. Like, I know my kids wear mismatched socks. I went through a phase when I was younger where I thought I was being a rebel by wearing mismatched socks. I get it. But, yeah, I guess that was actually a deliberate choice to show the good versus evil and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like the fact that I want to say how well coordinated these boys' outfits were. Yeah, that I did also mention, like, Columbia Outerwear there, you know, they've got some very nice looking ensembles going on, but I couldn't help but notice that they were well put together. Their scarves matched their mitts, and, you know, it was like, wow, these boys, they could teach my kids a thing or two, because my kids go out wearing whatever the fuck they can find. You lost your mitts again here? I might have some in the basket, hold on. You got, well, okay, fine. You got one orange and one yellow of the Magic Minis gloves. That's what you get today. So you left your good ones at school. Left your hot paws at school. Anyway. We get to the house. We meet Henry. Now, I'm intrigued by the filming style. Because when we meet Henry, there is a lot of handheld and very shaky, where, again, and it's kind of funny, because when we did our Beetlejuice episode, you brought up the fact that someone had taken The Shining and put, like, sitcom music to it, or, you know, you changed the context, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, this could be a fun comedy. You know, with this particular movie, if you had changed the music, it could have been an episode of The Office because of how shaky the cam was. Like, there were a couple of whip pans going on. Like, it just, I don't understand some of the camera work, like some of the cinematography choices in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember what you said the budget of this movie was, but I'd peg it somewhere between 17? $3 and $5.
Oh, so. Yeah, no, it was $17 million. Yeah, so, I don't know, yeah, it does feel independent, right? Did renting that house cost a lot? Is that what it is? They're not actually on the ocean. Apparently, that's a lake. And so when they were filming the scenes where she's standing on the cliff overlooking it, they had tugboats in the water off camera that were churning it up to cause the waves to make it look like an ocean. But yeah, they're standing on the cliff of a lake. But
that's cool.
That is pretty cool, actually.
But yeah, maybe renting the house cost $15 million, and so they only had $2 million left. Yeah, that paper mache mask, that's all you're getting, Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Can't even get you matching shoes. We'll say it's for to show good versus evil or some shit.
I will say it's kind of like watching the boys together. I was struck by just how of the era it is. Like the idea that these parents were just like, "Oh yeah, go outside. See you in 5 to 6 hours."
Yeah, go outside to your dangerous treehouse. Yeah, go play in the woods. No problem.
That treehouse is so irresponsible. Like, it's so
irresponsible.
So unnecessarily high up.
Yes. I was thinking that same thing.
Yeah, I don't know, Frank. Are things different in America? Are you allowed to just have, like, a treehouse? Like, who built that? A kid did not build a treehouse that was 50 feet in the air.
I doubt that. I've never seen one that high. I don't think any parent in their right mind would make one that high.
Yeah. Like, that required a crane of some sort to build.
A cherry picker.
Yeah. It sure did, yeah. Because, like, with even seeing how hard it was for them to climb the ladder because of the steepness of it. Like, is a tree steeper or were these, you know, like, are these footholds just terrible? But I can't see them nailing them in and going one at a time as they're nailing, you know. Oh, step up one, nail a new one. Step up one, nail a new one. Like,
it reminded me of that movie Fall on Netflix. Have you seen that one where the two women took on the radio tower?
Yeah.
I was like, that's the problem. Like, even if I got up there, it's like a blind jump to like figure out your foothold to get down that
thing. To find
thing.
That
like,
first, yeah, to find the first rung, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I let go, you think you can fly? Ooh, chilling. I mean, that's the first hint that something's off with Henry. Even though I guess earlier when they're at the dinner table and they're playing, hey, let's kick each other.
Under
the table.
Boys will be
boys. Yeah. That should be your hint. And I mean, we find out that there is something else going on because we've got a random empty room. Mm-hmm. You know, we've killed off some kid off screen, but we don't quite know it yet. It's just, it's maintained as a shrine to this child. But yeah, we get a little taste of, wait a minute, there's something else going on in this house. Is this the evil Simpsons? Is that, that's Maggie's room. Oh no, they killed off Maggie. That's what it is. Yeah. Yeah, the next thing they decide to do is, I mean, just be a couple of cut-ups and go to an abandoned factory and start throwing rocks through the window. Mm-hmm. Who's the guy? Like, is that security? Or, like, is this not an abandoned factory? Like,
I feel like it's a caretaker.
Okay, sort of, like, yeah, maybe, yeah. Guy
looking after the property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's just watching out for trespassers, but not because the fact they didn't actually break into this place. I mean, I think that's what I'm asking here, right?
Yeah, I think it was open.
Yeah, like it is actually legit abandoned. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then we also get to find out that Henry's other favorite place to put things, you know, where he hides his cigarettes, is this big, empty, creepy well. And we get the scene where he's like, I'm sorry. And he, you know, let's be friends. And he shakes his hand dangerously over. Like, again, why was there no taste of any? Well, I guess, I don't know. I was going to say, why is there no taste of him doing something scary there? But I guess you don't want to freak out Elijah Wood. You don't want to freak out Mark quite so early in the movie.
Yeah, this is. Yeah.
These were some of the lines that, like, I thought felt flat. Because of the home, let's just call it the Home Alone factor of this movie that just like it hangs over the entire movie and kind of undermines everything that Macaulay Culkin does. Because I think that line is meant to come off as being very sinister, but it just comes off as the Kevin, you little cutie.
Like it feels very. I was gonna say like when he's telling his little story around the lip of the well. It feels very much like when he sits down at the table and he's like, okay, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this in Home Alone, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I had my dinner at 9:15, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like that part where it's just he delivers the lines very well, but he delivers them as Kevin McAllister.
even the one that caught me the most was when he shows Mark the bolt gun for the first time, and they go and they're looking at the cat,
mm-hmm.
and he shoots the bolt, and it like whizzes past the cat's head, and then Mark's like, "Oh, great shot." And then it has that weird pan where it's like, where Mark's like, yeah, sight's still off. It was the exact delivery as like,
the sight's not like, quite right yet.
It was the exact delivery of like, time's up. Don't get scared now. Like it was the same, like it was the same thing.
This is your home. Time to defend it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys scared or you thirsty for more? I'm surprised. There should have been a scene of him at the end trying to like knock through. The director should have just went full Shining and had Kevin like knocking down doors and being like,
"Yeah,
Kevin, well, Henry, fuck."
I knew it would happen at some point.
You got to keep the name close so that the kid still remembers some of his previous identity. That's what happens when you go into foster homes. I don't know. Whatever. Okay, so now I got to say, they're not outrunning that dog. No way.
They're not. And I think like the one faulty moment of this movie is when Henry's like growling back at the dog, you can clearly see the straps on its shoulders of some dog trainer like pulling it back. I was like, I'm not even usually good at catching those types of things, but I noticed that.
Yeah, that one was a little rough. But I mean, like, yeah, just the way that like Mark falls down and has to get up again, and they're not outrunning that dog. That thing's like a pit bull. Those things are fast.
Yeah. Especially when they're hungry and want to mutilate a child.
Yeah, I was also thinking afterwards that type of dog could have for sure jumped over that fence.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. If it really wanted to get them that bad.
It's just been so well trained not to.
I guess.
Yeah. He knows that's when he gets the beating from his master. That's what you get when you live with Michael Vick. Whoa.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So then meanwhile, like to add to the mystery of this weird shrine bedroom that we've got, we also see that, Susan is always gazing out over the ocean. That seems to be Susan's side hustle. You know, I don't know. Does she have a job? I don't remember whether she has a job, but if she does, her side hustle is staring out over the ocean. If not, her full-time job is staring out longingly at the ocean for her dead son, Richard.
I would say, given the size of that house, she don't have no job. She's a trophy wife, for sure.
She's a trophy wife, 100%. Yeah. Are you saying that maybe her family helped him get that Yakuza meeting in Japan?
Yeah, they're old money.
They're old money? Okay. Yeah, the two brothers are helping each other out. Yeah.
You know, maybe she's a member of the Joy Lick Club. I can go all night.
Good for her.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, boy. So the next morning is that when they end up waking up early to do some, I guess, army drills, right? And Henry kills the dog, and he was only trying to scare him. What?
What?
I'm just Kevin McAllister. I was only trying to scare him.
Innocent little Macaulay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then this is when we get the dummy thrown off the overpass.
Right.
That is terrifying. I mean, I can't imagine how I would react if that happened to me. I'd just keep driving, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah, I feel like I'd probably react in the same way that happens in this movie. Just slam on the brakes and cause a massive accident.
Yeah.
It's kind of shocking, though, that, like, that doesn't become like a bigger news story. Like the message of the movie is almost like you could just do something like that and get away with it.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sure does. Yeah. Like it's on their TV at one point where you hear, oh, it happened. Right. But you'd think that would be a much bigger news story. Mm-hmm. There were dozens of cars. As yeah. Frank pointed out, we're talking Blues Brothers level pileup here on this freeway.
Yeah, like I think kind of a failure of this movie is that it might have worked better if Henry had made more of an effort to pin these things on Mark, frame him somehow, yeah. and throw it, like have the cops come over and be like, oh, I didn't want to do it, but my cousin, he's gone through a hard time, his mother just died, like that type of stuff.
Yeah,
I think would have made it would have helped again to, like, I don't know, maybe lessen the Home Alone effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean I do like the moment when Henry ends up not letting Mark talk to his father. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, okay, that's sneaky. You know, like there are good moments like that. But then,
or when he shows up at the counselor's office, that was like the best one, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then not too long later, he actually does get through to his father. So it's like, it would be better if he was never able to touch base with his father. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there is the point, too, with the counselor. I always thought that he was going to try to do in the counselor. You know, he's only there to kind of fuck with his life, but there's never any threat to the counselor. There's always a threat to Connie. But yeah. I kind of always felt like there needed to be threats to everyone else. You needed to have him think that this kid was going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I guess at the end, it's also Mom.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just, yeah, you should think that this is going to be some bloodthirsty fucking murderous Kevin McAllister.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Henry McAllister.
Henry McAllister.
Henry McAllister.
It's Kevin's twin brother. They were separated at birth. I don't believe in evil. You should. I have that line written down. So, you know, parents take, and here's another example of 1993. You know, I love this moment. You know, again, they're just rich. They do whatever they want. They don't care. They've got like 12-year-old kids. They're just going to take off for the evening. Yay. The older boys can watch the younger one. No problem. Yeah. They seem a little too young to be staying home alone, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not just me being a helicopter parent.
We're going to be at this restaurant. Call us on your landline and maybe we'll get through if you need help.
Yeah.
No cell phones.
Yeah. And it turns into, you know, like power outage hide and seek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's flip out the main breaker and make you think that I'm going to kill my sister.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, poor Connie. She's the true hero of this whole movie. To even put up with all that. Like, yeah. I would have loved if at the end of this movie, they're fighting, Henry's got Mark down on the edge of the cliff, and he's about to throw the rock down on his head, and you just have Connie come and push him over. Like, that would have been nice. the ultimate comeuppance.
Yeah.
And then, like, you can have a post-credit scene where you see Connie sitting on her bed, like, pulling the heads off of her dolls or something.
And then cut to black.
It turned out she was the evil one after all.
Yeah. That's right, she was pulling all the strings. Yeah. Oh, that would have been even better. Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole way. Yeah, but they leave their kids alone a lot. And I guess I'm not willing to do this with my own kids. That's why it feels so weird. Even though I was probably allowed to do a lot of this shit when I was a kid.
Yeah, but I totally was.
Yeah, the being left alone, the, you know, let's go down to Miller's Pond to do some skating. Let's, you know, like, and we've already established the dangerously high treehouse. It's just stuff I don't think I'd let my kids do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Yeah. In 2023, my kids are not doing that. But, I mean, on the flip side, I'm also not slapping my kids straight across the face for for what you think is a lie. That was quite the reaction.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that at all.
I don't buy. I mean, you can kind of, because you can kind of piece together that Henry was in the room when Richard died.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't buy at all that Susan doesn't suspect this fucker of, like, killing the baby. Like,
yeah.
Like, maybe that's why she's. I mean, I don't know. That's an inference. Maybe I would say maybe that's why she slaps him, because it's, like, one of those things where she kind of knows the truth. They also could have played that up a little more. Like, to me, it's just a little suspect that she doesn't, like, suspect Henry in any circumstance until, like, basically towards the end.
Yeah, until the very end. You can tell at the end she's like, yeah, no, I know who's telling the truth. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I would say one of the hardest scenes in this movie for me to watch, like, it made me actually uncomfortable and squirm in my chair, was when Henry takes Connie to the ice pond, mm-hmm, and, like, throws her on that thin ice. And when she falls in, and then he's laying there with his hand just outstretched, yeah, like, to make it look like, but, like, just silent and not, like,
not moving. Like, not blinking.
I was like, man, that was creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no emotion whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that easy. I like how, you know, they've just got this one area just roped off. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's how it probably actually would be, but you'd think they'd come out with at least some proper barriers rather than just, you know, ribbons.
Caution tape, yeah.
Caution tape,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that one, too, like it was warranted to have Henry give some, like, sad sack line. Like, can you please help my sister? Something like in his little Macaulay voice that he has. But that was, like, the one part where they keep him completely silent. I was almost questioning, like, maybe he just wasn't on set that day and they just had a body double.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, when you've got him with the therapist, he's, like, totally trying to convince them that they're, you know, there's the whole bit with the food where he's like, what, you think maybe I poisoned the food? And so, you know, Mark is going fucking crazy, shoving everything down the garbage disposal, and...
I want to say, that part, the moment I saw him throwing the food down, I actually burst out laughing.
Yeah.
Like... And I'm thinking to myself, this is a thriller. I'm not supposed to be laughing, but it's like, it's so he's like, he's willing to do it.
Yeah.
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 I felt
as he's plunging the stuff down. You've got, yeah, it really does feel silly. And yeah, that, but he is very sneaky with all these things where he's manipulative. You know, I poisoned the food, and the mom, dad, he's gone nuts because he's fucking, you know, like, he's mourning his mom. He's crazy, you know? Yeah.
I felt that about Frank, about the scene, like, after Connie gets saved and she's in the hospital when Henry shows up in the room and he, like, has the pillow. And then but then, like, their whole conversation, I don't want pull out another Office reference, but it reminded me so much of the episode where Jim convinces Dwight that he's turned into a vampire, and like he can't be in the sun. But it's like when he's like, when she's like, yeah, the doctors say she won't remember anything. That's good. And then tell Connie I'm okay, all right? Or tell Connie I was here, okay? Like, just those, like, deliveries remind me so much of, like, of that Jim Dwight dynamic that I, even though I was good, it's probably some of, like, the better acting that Macaulay Culkin does in this movie. It just, everything rings funny in this movie. Like, it's trying so hard to be a thriller, but everything is funny. I don't know why.
But see, and then to your point though, yeah, what I was trying to say, I was trying to bring it all back to the ice pond, is the fact that, yeah, it is strange. I agree with you 100% that in this one scene where you could have this really dramatic, oh no, my sister is drowning moment, you don't have that. But all these other moments with the therapist, with the food, all that sort of stuff, yeah, he's always trying to throw this kid under the bus, or he's always got some line, he's always got some cover story.
Yeah.
But yeah, what's going on the ice? He's got his hand out. That's his cover story. I was trying to save her. My hand was out. Is that all you got? Come on. I like the very deliberate, though, everybody getting in Mark's way as he's trying to sprint across the ice. Like,
yeah, you know,
it's almost like you needed some, you know, some slide whistle sounds and some gongs and bangs and crashes, because it was like, it was very much like this could have been an America's Funniest Home Video sound effects department because of how many obstacles he was facing trying to get out across the ice. Get out of the way, kid. It kind of felt like the scene in Home Alone where he's being chased out of the store across the ice, you know, sliding through people's legs. Shoplifter. Yeah, there's a fine line between thriller and comedy, and they didn't quite find the way over the line in a lot of moments of this movie.
That's for sure.
A little tweak. I'll go down that rabbit hole, like you said, with that Shining trailer of just change some music and all of a sudden you have a very different movie.
how anti-Home Alone would it have been if instead of trying to keep everybody out of the house, Kevin just kills everybody in the house?
With his rusty bolt gun or crossbow. Yeah. Yeah. It was on a crossbow killing spree.
Yeah.
So once we get to the point, though, where Mark is shoving things down the garbage disposal, and I mean, we, of course, how excited do you think Macaulay Culkin was on the day when he got to come in and say, "Don't fuck with me"? Like, he was probably, he delivers that message with all the heart. Like,
Yes.
But I hate bringing it back to Home Alone all the time, but you can kind of see Kevin McAllister having that same sort of reaction with the wet bandits, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what some of his lines should have been. You know, he throws a paint can over them and over the edge and clubs them in the head with it. Don't fuck with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stay out of my house.
Damn, right.
Your house.
We get to the point, though, where Mom ends up going and breaks into the shed. She has a look around. She has a bit of a look-see at Henry's shed. And Henry comes back, and it becomes this whole discussion over the rubber duck.
Uh-huh.
There is something about the rubber duck, because it was Henry's before it was Richard's. So he wants it back, please. And then he really loses his shit. And he, like, grabs the duck and he runs away.
This is, in my opinion, this is the genius of Macaulay Culkin. This is, like, I don't know if you got direction on this, but okay. it's like a masterful bit of acting. He has this whole fight to get this duck that he wants, because it's his duck. It's not Richard's duck. And he gets it. And he runs to the well. First. And he goes to throw it, but he stops and looks at it. And then he just, like, and he just lets it go.
Like
he was gonna throw Richard's duck away, but then he just lets go of his own duck, because if he can't have it, then nobody else can. Like, it was so brilliant.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, though, it seems like the well should have been used more in a way. Like, it seems like the well is this place that he likes to go to hide things, to throw things away.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a body in that well.
you kind of think that there's going to be, yeah. But it doesn't come up as much as I would have thought it should. You know, like, it's, how come Connie is never taken to play near the well?
Yeah.
That's to show off Macaulay Culkin's skating abilities, I'm sure.
The one, like, miss on the well, I thought, was there is that one scene where Mark and Henry are, like, having a fight, and they're both standing on the top of the well, and Henry, like, reaches over to, like, shake his hand, like, to make up, like, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, like, there should have been something there, like, maybe he pulled them or, like, scared him or something, like...
Yeah.
But
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, But that happened too early in the movie. And he hadn't really been established as having done many evil things at that point. That was one of the first tastes that something was up with Henry. Like, if that scene had been later in the movie, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once we're starting to suspect that something's really up with Henry. But yeah, that was happening pre... I don't know. I mean, again, it always goes back to the way some of the lines are delivered. It's just like, even once things start actually getting sinister, I can't always take them as sinister. So I guess I can't necessarily say that about the well scene either. That it was too early. Yeah, I thought the well would come back more often. But yes, he throws the duck down the well, and so I guess...
You forgot to talk about, well, the well is where Henry keeps his smokes.
Oh, yeah. No,
oh, yeah.
He does definitely, yeah. No, I thought I mentioned that at one point earlier. But yes, that's where he, of course, yes, he keeps his cigarettes. So the kid's smoking. I guess it was like dried lettuce and something. Not real cigarettes.
Yeah, terrible stuff. You know.
But watching a kid smoke, it just...
It's not fun.
Yeah, I mean...
You're right, no.
As someone that, you know, was a smoker for so long, you can watch a movie and tell who really does smoke in real life sometimes when you see his smoking in a movie. But at this time, if Macaulay Culkin was smoking already, which he possibly could have been at in Hollywood, you never know. But if he was, then this was the best bit of acting that Macaulay Culkin was doing, was looking like he shouldn't be smoking. Because, yeah, that kid did not look like a natural smoker. But, yeah, so Mom, of course, she has to punch in for another shift, you know, down at the cliff's edge. And so she's out staring at the edge, and... and you know, and Henry goes down there, and I missed the part where with the scissors, where we get Mark pulling the scissors on Henry and then getting locked in an office for it.
Right.
That's 90s discipline. I'm just gonna lock you in here.
And then that leads to like the fact that we're supposed to believe that like all 40 pounds of childhood Elijah Wood could escape from a grown, probably like 230-pound man.
Yeah. Yeah. That kid is destined for like the NFL one day or something. He can just get past any kind of guard. Yeah, he's good.
I totally forgot that, like, the mom, like, that Susan does actually go over the edge of the cliff. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the only real... I mean, okay, I guess there's two intense parts in this movie. I mean, when all is said and done, there really are only two super scary moments. And I think one is... the ice with Connie, and the second is, you know, all this cliff stuff at the end.
Right.
I guess the dangling from the treehouse at the beginning, with Mark dangling from the treehouse, could have been one as well.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I think this cliff stuff, though, was kind of cool. I liked the whole epic ending of this with the, you know, trying to push her over the edge and then the kids going over the edge. They actually dangled these kids over the edge of a cliff.
What? Were there nets?
they legitimately didn't. Yeah, they
really.
Yeah, they were harnessed in. They had wires, oh, okay. All that sort of stuff. But they were legitimately filmed over the cliff, 180 feet over this lake.
Wow.
And they did build a separate duplicate cliff set for like the close-ups of the face so that they weren't trying to get dangerous shots from 180 feet up for the close-ups. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, and when Macaulay Culkin drops, they actually dropped him 30 feet. They signed his dad, Kit Culkin, signed off on them dropping him 30 of the 180 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Did his own stunts. Wow.
Macaulay Culkin stuntman too, I guess. Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah, it's still that scene is like the coup de grace of this like whole whole movie, I think. And that's why, like I was saying at the top, if you talk to anybody about this movie, they know that scene. Like, this movie could have been, is like, its other title is, oh yeah, the one where the mom has the two boys on the cliff. Like, that's its friend, that's its Friends episode title. But yeah, it's just so good. It's not as like watching it now, it's not as poignant as I remember it being, but it was still a very good scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the build up to it is kind of what hurts it inevitably.
Mm-hmm.
Just because if you had had a bit of a better movie leading into this moment, then it would have hit harder at the end. But the fact that there's such a hard turn in this movie, maybe if she had been doubting Henry all along, like you brought up earlier with the fact that she had to have known, come on, that he was involved with Richard's death somehow. She must have suspected a little bit. Come on. She had to have. If there had been some of that all the way through, where she's always trying to debate between which side to take and always takes Henry's side anyway, there wasn't enough of that struggle the whole way through the movie that there wasn't enough gravitas to this ending.
Yeah. I feel like Henry also could have been more taunting. Like, when he had her over the edge and he's, like, going to find the rock. Like, I wish he... Like, I always love, like, a good villain monologue as they're about to, like, give their final stroke.
Look at me, I'm all alone eating Kraft dinner.
Isn't anybody gonna come out and stop me?
I'm about to smash my mom's head in with a rock.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Exactly.
I made my family disappear.
Yeah.
They're all in the well.
Hey, Mom.
You know, I do want to mention that, like you said, it takes so long to get to that. Because while I was watching it, I paused it to go to the bathroom, and then I looked at the thing. I was like, wait, this movie ends in 10 minutes. And, like, they haven't even gotten to the cliff part yet or anywhere near anything remotely. I'm like, how is this gonna end?
They wrap it up fast.
Yeah This is the thing I normally love about 90s movies, is like, it's just like everybody gets saved, credits. Like nowadays we would get to see like, oh, like how Mark's life turned out, his dad is back home from Japan, and you know, Connie, we'd get to even see that Connie's okay and, like, not brain damaged or something. I don't know, like, how's she doing? Like,
well, you know. Elijah Wood made up for it, like, 20 years later when he made a movie that had, like, 15 endings on it, because this one didn't have a full ending.
Yeah. I mean, I said that I wanted to talk about the ending of this movie earlier, and the one thing I wanted to bring up was, like, what was with the choice to show the body and then have it disappear? Like, all of a sudden, this movie has turned into, like, a Friday the 13th style, like, slasher flick, where it's, like, are we expecting, like, The Good Son 2? Like, Return of Henry? Like, he's gonna come back and seek vengeance on his mother and family? Like, that's what this, that's what the end of this movie makes me believe. Like, even Mark's little monologue at the end kind of sets up that premise. Like, Henry is coming back from the dead. He's rising up from the well to, like, come and murder everyone.
I mean, right from the beginning of this movie, we do establish that this kid wants his mother to come back to life and keeps expecting his mother to come back to life. Whoops, your spell failed, Mark. It's actually Henry that's coming back. Look out, next time he's going to come and fuck you up. He's actually going to drop you. He's going to see if you can fly.
Yeah, I just feel like there's like lost opportunity here for like No Good Son 2, because it reminded me a lot of like the Jason Voorhees, like, I mean, he gets drowned in the lake or whatever by people's negligence, but but it's still like Henry has all the creations of a vengeful spirit.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, in the end, though, like, with this particular, the ending works for me. no matter what, the moment works for me where Henry is like, Mom, I love you, Mom, right? And yeah, turning on that innocence so well in that final moment. But then it's like, but she fucking drops Henry. And it's like, yes, you actually want to cheer the fact that she drops Henry. And it's like, you made the right choice, lady. Ultimately, we all know it. Don't worry. None of us are blaming you for that one. We understand how hard it was. Like, she played it well. Wendy Crewson, that was one very well-acted moment in this movie, was her moment that she decided, no, I'm going to save this one good child. She's going to save the titular good son, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was so clutch that at one point Henry starts saying, Mom, I need your other arm. Mom. Like, it was so good.
That kid's always thinking.
It was similar to the ending of Orphan, remember?
No,
I haven't seen Orphan.
Oh, you haven't seen Orphan? Oh, no. It's kind of similar to that, but except this is her actual kid she killed. But but yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is The Good Son. Now, Colin Frank on IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10, not bad. Has a Metascore of 45. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 25% on the tomato meter.
Yeah, those critics hating it.
And an audience rating of 54%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like shooting a rusty bolt at a pit bull. Hit us with some reviews.
Colkvember. Alrighty. Mediana R says, darkest movie ever. This was the darkest movie I've seen in my lifetime. Oh, 5 out of 5 stars also. I mean by darkest that the whole script of Macaulay Culkin playing the Henry role were really scary and heart-beating the whole time. The fact that the story could be true is devastating. Still, this movie is one of a kind and one of the best I recall seeing. Two boys in this movie did make their lifetime best roles. I think Elijah Wood would disagree, but and at the end, I'd make the same decision.
Yeah, there's a I could, even without going into the obvious of Lord of the Rings, I could probably name several better Elijah Wood movies. Lifelong friends, though, off of this movie. Like, I guess Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood are still actually really close to this day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
John W. gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, The Good Son is a nostalgic thriller for me. I'd watch this over and over as a kid. The Good Son doesn't quite hold up as it used to and is pretty tame for an R-rated feature. It is cool to see Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin acting at this age. Culkin delivers a good performance as a disturbed 12-year-old doing evil deeds. Wood gives a good performance as well, seeming very mature for his age. Story-wise, the writers squander an unsettling premise. Not even an hour and a half long, this movie could have done so much more and focused more on the psychological stuff in depth. It felt like it rushes to get to the movie's final act. The movie is a pretty standard generic thriller we've seen plenty of times before, only memorable because it's kids acting this out instead of adults. I'll always have a soft spot for this movie as I'm a fan of the actors, but if you're not a fan, you may find this dated and dull. I do find the ending interesting and bold. Shame the credits roll without having a little more time with the characters to explore the repercussions and consequences.
Yeah, I mean, to that guy's point of, like, I've seen this done before, except this time it's with kids. Ooh, how original. It's like, yeah, the director himself directed one involving a stepfather, directed one involving a crazy stalker boyfriend. Like, you know, he's done the same movie with three different relationships right there. So, yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, that only thing that makes it unique is that it's done with kids, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mary-Kate and Ashley should have had a thriller like this. Oh my god, The Good Daughter, and it's like, what twist, twins, what the fuck? That's how they're getting away with it all.
Yeah.
Joseph B. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, I think this movie is much better than the reviews, especially considering someone who lived it at the time. There was no CGI, and if you can get past the fact that Macaulay Culkin wasn't a good guy defending his home during Christmas, I think the movie was creepy as hell. Those are the reviews I got.
Culkvember! Right on. So yes, mid-50s. That's kind of where we're sitting.
you know, except for the 6.4. Like, IMDb, strangely, it's IMDb that likes this movie the most. That's not usually where it sits. That 25% is a little bit harsh. But yeah, we're sitting at around 50% with this movie. This is one that I laugh at this movie now thinking about. To me, this is the true Home Alone 3. I have now made this whole backstory that Kevin McAllister was removed from his parents and had to be put into some sort of foster system, and his name was changed to Henry. And I think that's now planted in my head as canon for this movie. And then I can see Kevin McAllister doing everything in this movie. There is that fine line, because you have Macaulay Culkin starring in it, there is that fine line between a quirky little fun Macaulay Culkin, I'm a cute kid movie, and the thriller. And unfortunately, they're walking right on that line. They're not going strongly one way or the other. I mean, there is really only one way that they should be going in this movie, but yeah, it's... They needed to amp up the sinisterness somehow in this movie. So I can understand how this is a 50% movie. They didn't quite go all the way there. They could have gone there and they didn't. But boy, did I have fun watching this movie and revisiting this movie and having this conversation with you gentlemen today. Like, it wasn't very good, but I had so much fun with it. Like, I think that's kind of where I ultimately sit with it is... As a Home Alone movie, it's hilarious. As a thriller son movie, it's not as good as it could be. That last moment was great, but otherwise, at least I had fun with it. Frank, your first time seeing this movie, what did you think of The Good Son?
Like I said, I came in completely fresh, not knowing a thing about this movie. And after watching it, my gut reaction is you know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think I laughed more than I should have for a thriller film, and I think a lot of it is mostly filler stuff that could have been easily transgressed into a smaller runtime.
Yeah,
and I paid, I think, $3.99 to watch this movie on YouTube to rent it, and I believe this movie could be worth about $3.99. It's worth the price, but don't expect it to grab it the next time you want to watch a film.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, at the top, you did mention that your introduction to Macaulay Culkin was Uncle Buck, and then Home Alone was It's That Kid from Uncle Buck. How much are you aware of Macaulay Culkin now? Like, since your introduction to Macaulay Culkin, do you know a lot of his stuff, or have we kind of listed everything that you know of him? Like, what about, like, Richie Rich or any of... How well do you know his stuff?
Well, I've seen Richie Rich, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah, I remember. But besides that, I don't think I've seen any more films of his after that. I have kind of kept in touch with him in later years, and I was surprised back in high school when he had his cover band of the Velvet Underground, and I thought that was fascinating. And in recent years, he married, or I don't think he's married to her, but he has a child with Brenda Song, who I watched growing up on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. And I remember the first time I heard that, I was just like, huh? Because like I didn't know that they worked together on, I think it was American Horror Story, was it? Is that right? Or something that they worked
like
together
that, yeah,
on a project, and that's how they met. And he never ceases to amaze me. He really does.
Yeah.
He's a cool dude, I'll admit. And he's always finding some way to keep himself there. And that's good.
Yeah, he had a podcast for a while, which I enjoyed. But the guy he did it with sounded exactly like him. So it was always hard to tell whether it was him telling a story or whether it was his co-host.
Really?
And so that was one thing though. But yeah, he stopped doing it at the end of like 2021 or something like that. So, but yeah, Bunny Ear is the podcast. I think it still exists online if you wanted to go listen to some of his stories. And for the longest time in that podcast, he
was kind of hinting that he was dating someone, but not really. And then you kind of found out eventually that it was Brenda's song that he was talking about the whole time. And then, you know, that kind of really came out once they had their kid together. But anyway, yes, I guess it's relevant because it's Culkvember. We don't need to be talking too much about Macaulay Culkin's personal life, whatever.
But you were asking me what I knew him for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's true. It's all on brand. Yeah, so
I got nothing overall, against the guy.
Yeah.
So overall, though, for The Good Son, yeah, you're kind of like, man, we've given you better first time movies with you on this show. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you enjoyed Blade more. You enjoyed The Crow more.
Yeah.
I mean, right, those are better movies.
Yeah, Paul Cullen, there we go. There's our segue. Bring us home. What was your thought of The Good Son on this viewing? You seem to come in with the most love. I mean,
yeah, I agree with both of you. I will say that, like, I still love this movie for the nostalgia factor, but I agree with Frank in that I found it hilarious on this watch, like, so funny. Like, I just, like, every time Macaulay Culkin opened his mouth, I think I laughed.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, it was a weird experience because I remember watching it as a kid and just being kind of confused. Like, I don't even think as a kid I found it, like, scary. I think I was just, like, confused. I think I was just, like, confused by what I was watching.
Yeah,
but as an adult, and as, like, I don't know, I think I've mentioned on this podcast, like, Home Alone is, like, it's in my top five, like, favorite movies. It's, like, I watch it probably 100 times every Christmas season. Like, I watch it repeatedly. And it's just to watch this movie as an adult, I just could not help but be like, it's still Kevin McAllister. Like, it's just a continuation.
So is.
Like, yes. It's so,
and it's bizarre, but it's true. And so I still love it, but maybe I just love it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, even if there had been more talk of other strange things that have been going on, because not even that was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long ago was Richard's death?
That's the other thing. They make it seem like it hasn't been that long, and I was going to mention this, but, like,
did it happen at the same time as Mom's death? Like, is everyone in mourning right now? Like, recent mourning?
Even if it was six months ago, there's no way you're accepting another child into your house. Like, those parents are, like, destroyed. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. But, I did think that was strange.
Yeah, like, it feels like it should have been years.
Yeah, the movie, to Frank's point, other point, I think, in terms of, like, the runtime, I think this movie needed more, like, to go farther with Henry. Like, I would have loved it if when Mom at the end finds the cabin full of all his little trophies, that there would have been, like, actual trophies linked to things that, like, he had Connie's skates. He had, like, a tire from, like, the truck, that one of those trucks that got smashed at the bridge. Or he had the fucking dog's carcass. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, just more of that, I think, would have cemented it a little. Like, show how, like, messed up this kid is, like. Because really, it just kind of comes off like he's a fun little prankster who takes his pranks too far. Like, I don't know.
you little scamp, you.
Yeah.
Dennis the Menace. Yeah. So. Well, right on. There we go. That is The Good Son, and that's our show for this week.
Culkvember.
Oh boy, a huge thank you to our pal from down south, Mr. Frank Driscoll. Frank, if people want to find you out there in the world doing your thing, plug your stuff, where can people find you?
It's nice to have something to promote again at the end of the show. That's
a good absolutely.
Feeling.
Yeah.
I, as mentioned at the top, I've recently re-entered the world of podcasting. My program Well, our umbrella program for me is called Across the Circus. It's created by Algid Productions. And my personal segmented program is called Driscoll's Election Dissection. Whenever there's a election hopping up in the United States, I will be talking about it. And just for you guys, I'll make a promise today. Whenever the next Canadian parliamentary election occurs, I will discuss it. I promise you that right now. I promise. Nice. I'll do my research, do the best I can to our neighbors up north.
I feel like we got a mayoral election coming up in the next, like, 2 years in Edmonton. If you want Sean and I to come on your show, and we can, like, be Stephen Colbert-style, like, fake analysts.
Well, he says parliamentary.
I'm not flying to Ottawa to, like...
Yeah, like, Frank, you're not doing local politics, though. Like, you're for American, you're doing, like... Are you doing state and federal, or just federal?
That's kind of where I've been so far. I hadn't really, well, probably a big city like New York City or Los Angeles, maybe, depending on how the circumstances are. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah.
And also, if anybody out there is in the East Bay, you can catch me Tuesday nights at Up and Under Pub and Grill in Point Richmond, where I host Trivia Night through King Trivia. And also, if I'd like to say something else, because this is going to air in November, right?
Yeah.
Cold November. But November is Men's Health Awareness Month. And since I was in high school, I've always participated in No Shave November. But nice. I've learned it's more about... It's less about growing out your beard hair and more about, you know, raising awareness for those who cannot grow out their hair due to illness. So I have a fundraising page for the month of November at noshavenovember.com. The link will be on Instagram once available and all that. And I'm raising money where it will be donated to Fight CRC, which is fighting every day to hopefully one day find a cure for colorectal cancer. So if you'd like to give, you can do it there.
Right on. I'll see you. Colorectal almost sounds like Cult-vember. See?
Cult-vember. See? So...
Was expecting that.
I don't know. It's right on. Well, thank you so much, Frank, for joining us. If you like that show, you know, like, subscribe, all those things, download, share our posts, tell your friends, because word of mouth is one of the things that matters most to a podcast. There's nothing like telling someone and saying, hey, there's this show I like. It means more than even reviews, but boy, oh boy, if you haven't given us a review, if you like the show, go give us 5 stars or a review, you know, and help drive us up some charts. Help use science to get us some algorithms to move us around and help people find our show. Or become a producer of the show. Go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. And if you want to become a financial supporter, you can become a producer and get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Tell us you love us. Tell us you love the pod. Let us know what movies you like or used to like and that you would want to see us talk or see us. Hear us talk about.
And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin Cult-vember. I'm excited about this. Now we've got actually the one that Frank was introduced to the man, the myth, the legend with. And next week, we have Uncle Buck.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, I've never actually seen Uncle Buck the whole way through.
Oh, okay, the whole way through, that's acceptable. I'll take that. If you had said, like, I haven't seen a single goddamn minute of this.
That'd be sacrilegious in my house.
But hey, at least he's seen it now. That's all that matters. That's all that matters, yeah. Yeah, it's not your past, it's the now. That's what matters. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, Frank wasn't able to come on Uncle Buck because we have our resident John Hughes person coming back. We have Carly Pettit coming back to talk some more John Hughes with us. Yeah, she was previously on our Ferris Bueller's Day Off and our Breakfast Club episodes, so... got to have Carly back for
it's just as justifiable.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because also more John Candy, and it's been a minute. It's been a minute since we've had John Candy on the show. I'd say, what was it? Career opportunities. We got our little taste of John Candy. Is that our last John Candy?
Wasn't it the summer house or summer vacation? What was that vacation one?
Summer rental.
Summer rental.
Yeah, that was.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was there.
That was with Frank. Yeah.
That was one of the better ones we introduced Frank to over this one, but. Yeah, no, yeah, Summer Rental, that was a good one. But no, yeah, the last time we saw, I think it was episode 88, Career Opportunities. We haven't had John Candy on this show since, I don't think. We've needed it. I need it. Some John Candy, but more important, some cult-vember. Well, there
hopefully
we go.
Hopefully you put actual horns in post, maybe, but...
Well, anyway, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And thanks for, and of course over there, Frank Driscoll. Thanks for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at Uncle Buck on I Used to Like This One.
Cult-vember.